Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, and a very warm welcome in to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. First heard every Tuesday at 1 p.m. and repeated on a Thursday at 9 p.m. Or if you prefer a podcast, we drop each Friday from your podcast provider of choice. Tech Talk, of course, it's your opportunity to connect with other blind and partially sighted people to share what you've learned from the world of technology. What's accessible? What's inaccessible? What is in your technology in tray? We would love to know. Do record us a voice note or just write up a good old-fashioned email and send that in to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be finding out about accessible technology from Samsung. We'll be chewing over some of the announcements from Apple's recent WWDC, and we'll be putting your ears to the test with a little bit of help from AI. Welcome in to our co-host this week, Callum Stoneman. How are you, sir?
Hello, I'm doing good. Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, smashing, smashing. What's on your techdar this time?
Techdar, I like that. Oh, so much stuff. I think these WWDC announcements are very interesting. I'm looking forward to getting into that. It's definitely been an interesting week in the world of Apple.
Well, it was, and now we've had a little bit of time for the dust to settle and to, you know, chew things over. We'll be getting into that a little bit later on, so stick around. It's another Tech Talk. On the 21st and 22nd of June, the great and the good of the technology world will be converging on the Science Centre in Glasgow for the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference, hosted by RNIB Scotland. RNIB Connect Radio's Alan Russell spoke with Director of RNIB Scotland, James Adams.
In the 21st century, technology is a game changer for blind and partially sighted people, from being able to use IT equipment to smart devices, televisions, microwaves. So when we talk about technology, it's also about making that accessible, whether it's off-the-shelf technology or bespoke technology. Now, RNIB Scotland is hosting a conference in Glasgow this coming June. It's on the 21st and the 22nd. So to tell us more about the conference and how you can get involved, we have with us James Adams, the Director of RNIB Scotland. James, thank you very much for joining us. So what was the catalyst then for the conference? Why were you needing to put this on this year?
I think, as you say, Alan, technology is a, you know, can be a real game changer that can actually make a real qualitative difference to the lives of people with sight loss, including in, you know, field of employment, social life, you know, engaging in society. But what is crucially important is that that conversation continues to be had with the blind and partially sighted people, with the likes of RNIB, but also crucially with the technology companies and innovators, as well as bits of government as well. We need to make sure that we can do all we can to put the interests of blind and partially sighted people in this area right at the forefront of that conversation.
And these technology companies as well, you know, are they engaged and have they been engaged? Because technology moves so fast now, and I suppose you really want to ensure accessibility especially is, you know, built in from the drawing board.
Absolutely. And we're absolutely delighted, Alan, that we've got some flagship technology companies and lots of innovative technology companies all coming to the conference. Google are supporting the conference, and their head of inclusivity and design is coming to the conference, Christopher Patno. We've also got the likes of Amazon making a contribution. We've also got Microsoft, companies like that. So we've got a really good mix of these technology companies coming along to really sort of talk about putting design right at the start, accessibility in the work that they do, and that is just so very crucial for every single blind and partially sighted person across the world.
You know, I notice you've got the likes of ScotRail there. There's even someone coming to talk from the UN as well. So a vast spectrum of people here.
It's global with a distinct Glasgow twist, Alan, is the way I put it. As you said, we have Axel Lebois, who heads up our United Nations initiative on ensuring digital accessibility is built into the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And that, you know, that's a very important piece of work. I'm also delighted that Dan Stentoff, who's the Secretary General of the World Blind Union, she's going to make a contribution as well. So we have some really good, strong international guests and engagement, but also Richard Lockhead, who's the Minister in Scotland for Scottish Parliament for Small Business, Innovation and Trade. He's coming along to open the conference. Yeah, so we have some really good, strong engagement right across the sort of governmental, technological and visual impairment sector. And of course, we will have an awful lot of blind parts of people themselves coming along to find out more, to talk to the companies. You know, some technology companies are taking up spaces in the marketplace, and there will be plenty of breaks and opportunities within the conference to do networking, to come and talk about their experience of technology, how they might access it. And of course, the technology companies themselves, one of their motivators for wanting to engage in this type of conference is in fact because they want to know, they want to hear from people with lived experience, people with sight loss, the sort of barriers or the opportunities and the, you know, innovation and, you know, technology development. And also the more voices they can hear from and the more engagement they have, you know, overall, the better the accessibility of the products that they're going to innovate. So if anybody is interested, it's about just getting in touch. If you look at our Twitter profile, which is at RNIB Scotland, all one word, you should be able to find lots of references to this conference. If somebody wants to go on the internet to find it, it's www.rnib.org.uk/courses/inclusive-design.
James, it'll be a fantastic event, I'm sure. We will be covering lots going on there, so if people are unable to make it, we will bring them some of the highlights too. But as James says, please do come along, take part, talk to the people in charge, talk to the people that can make a difference, and even get a look at some of the products as well. James, thank you very much for telling us all about it on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Samsung, of course, is a global leader in consumer electronics. And joining us now to explore and celebrate Samsung's commitment to accessibility and inclusive design, we are joined by Mikkel Fodor, who is a UX researcher from Samsung, and Robin Spinks, who is RNIB's head of inclusive design. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Mikkel, I'm going to come to you first. Just tell us generally what accessibility and inclusive design means to Samsung.
The goal for Samsung is to make the user experience as good for everyone, no matter who they are. And with accessibility, it's about providing the right tools and features that make the phone not just easy to use, but also enjoyable to use. Part of what helps us to get to the point where the accessibility tools and features are maximally satisfying to their users is with the inclusive design. And this is where we go direct to the customer base to get their feedback on our designs and for them to be part of the design process. And when it comes to accessibility, this is extremely important because the people designing the features may not know what it's like to be blind. And so they need to get that feedback directly from people about the different features in order for us to learn and to develop the features so that they suit everyone's needs.
Speaking of the customer, he's right here, Robin Spinks. Let's bring you in, head of inclusive design at RNIB. What does it mean for us to work with a company like Samsung?
Well, you know, technology has become an integral part of all of our lives. And certainly for any of us who live day to day with a visual impairment, I'm registered severely sight impaired. I can see the top letter on the eye test chart. I'm told there are others, I just can't see them. But for me, technology is absolutely pivotal in achieving things that I want to do in day-to-day life. So we're delighted to be working with Samsung and really creating that bridge between users and designers and engineers, because I think, as has been said, it's all about making sure that you're as close to your users as possible and that the people who are designing those features actually understand the day-to-day realities and complexities of completing a task. So yeah, delighted to be working with Samsung and to be here sharing news on what we've been working on.
Mikkel, can you go ahead and do that then. Just share some recent progress that Samsung has made integrating accessibility in your mobile products.
Yeah, so we've been putting a lot of effort into making advancements over the last few years. We got a number of different features on the phone which help with that. And the first one is the screen reader, which we use the tool, turns everything on the phone that is visible into audio. And you can interact it through swipes and taps. And and back when we started with the screen reader, I remember when we were testing with it, and it wasn't very stable at the beginning. And the users were telling us that it would like jump around, and they felt like they weren't completely in control of it. And it led to a very sort of unsatisfying experience. But now, these days, with a lot of fine-tuning through testing with RNIB, it's gotten a lot more stable. And it's much, much, much better now, and it's a lot more satisfying to use. There's a number of other features as well, of course, for people who've got like low vision. And so we've got like high contrast themes, which are just themes which will boost the contrast of the phone. But recently, I mean, it feels like it's been on the phone for ages now, but the dark mode, which came out, maybe it's 2 years ago, but everyone's gotten used to it really quickly, but it's become like the most popular feature, I would say, for the low vision users. And it's just one which basically applies white on black for most apps. But what's so good about it, as compared to like the high contrast themes, is it works across most apps, and much easier to read what's on the screen if like glare is a problem for you. Yeah, and that one's become really popular. You can also do things like high contrast fonts to make them pop out and make those easier to read. And there's also high contrast keyboard options as well, with a number of different color types, whether you like it yellow on black or blue on black. And those can be used to boost the usability of the keyboard. We've also got other things like removing animation effects to reduce the eye fatigue. And also we've got color filters, which can be used if, again, what if like a white background is makes things difficult to read. And so you can use a color filter, put that on, and those can definitely help with reading speed and comfort. I know, like with some people who feel that they might be dyslexic, actually tests have shown how black on white writing can be quite dazzling, and then if you put like different filters on it, then all of a sudden it becomes a lot easier to read. And that's worth giving a go. Users of it, they can also change the style of the fonts and the zoom level, making everything easier to read on screen. And just boosting like the zoom and the fonts, of course, sometimes you get like formatting issues, and obviously there's been lots of improvements on that over the years, and making sure that apps fit to the screen properly when you boost the size is very important. And then another great tool that we have is the magnifier window, which you can access via like triple tap on the screen or the accessibility button, and that'll bring up like a magnifying window. And one of them is just like a small one which you can drag across the screen, highlighting different things on there, or you can have the whole window version. Those familiar with it, that's an essential tool, and those are our sort of core tools which help with making the phone much more usable for visual accessibility.
Robin, just explain, as somebody with albinism, what some of those visual accommodations mean for you.
Yeah, for me, it's really interesting. I'm constantly experimenting with the inbuilt features on a whole range of handsets. But I think, you know, as Mikhail pointed out there, I think really the combination of magnification, dark mode, and also being able to change the colour filters, what's brilliant is the opportunity to achieve a really high level of customization that works for you as an individual. So for me, I'm a dark mode everything on devices. It really does make a huge difference, not just to the general readability of text, but also it minimises pretty substantially visual fatigue, headaches that tend to occur from long periods of usage. So dark mode, and then also the magnification. So I tend to like full screen magnification. That's a personal preference.
Some people will want to use a Win, so it's really important, and it's great that they've got the opportunity to do either on Samsung. But full screen magnification, dark mode, and just really making sure that I can dial it in and get the adjustments the way that I want to have them. I'm also using the camera a lot to photograph things and then take advantage of the excellent zoom capability to zoom in and look at more detail. So, you know, if I see a structure or a building and I'm interested in it, I'll take a picture of it so that I can have a look and see how's it put together, how is it actually built. That's not something that I'd be able to determine with my vision that I have. So, you know, the camera on the Samsung phone for me is actually like an extension of my own vision system. And I'd say as time goes by, I'm finding new ways to utilize that, whether it's looking at menus, looking at buildings, as I say, or even just looking at landscapes when I'm out and about exploring. It's constantly a tool that enables me to see things in greater detail and to appreciate contrast and texture and form. So yeah, fantastic to have that ability to customize and really dial the device in to make it as personal as possible.
Mikhail, you've talked about accessibility settings that apply system-wide. What work is going on at the app level with specific mobile apps?
Yeah, so we have a large suite of Samsung apps which have been properly tailored to the accessibility experience. And because we're in control of those ones, it means that we're able to make sure that they work properly with things like the screen reader and then the magnifiers and make sure that the contrasts are properly configured as per the guidelines, and so that they should have optimal contrast and optimally work with the screen reader. Our apps will cover most of the different needs that you have on the phone, or the email, the calendar, your camera, all that sort of thing. And because we're in control of those, the core apps that we have, it means that we can make changes quickly based on feedback that we get in the testing, and they've come a long way. But it's not just the core apps that we got as well. We also work very closely with our third-party apps, and especially some of the top ones. And we try and ensure that they also work very well with the different tools that are on the phone.
And how are you doing that? Are you offering app developers advice, support, specific tooling to make sure that those third-party apps are accessible?
Yeah, so we have a number of guidelines for how the apps need to be tailored, and if needed, where it's not working.
Okay, I'm going to move away from mobile. At RNIB, we often hear from blind and partially sighted people who are struggling to use domestic appliances, in particular white goods. Can you talk a little bit, Mikhail, about some of Samsung's work in that space?
Yeah, well, I don't work on domestic appliances per se, so I can't speak in depth about the actual appliances. But what's really interesting, because as I work on the mobile side, is that that line between domestic appliances and the mobile sphere is getting blurred because of smart technology. And I think this is probably the most exciting area for the future, because we got this app called SmartThings. And just putting it bluntly, SmartThings is the best app for controlling all the different smart devices which you can connect to your phone. And a lot of these sort of domestic appliances, they're coming now with smart technology, especially in the Samsung sphere, and them becoming smart in the way that they can connect to your phone is it takes advantage of the technology on the phone, because, you know, you'll get your app and you'll have like a controller for each of your device, and on there it'll have all the different modes for your washing machine or dishwasher. And because it's on the phone, you can use the screen reader with it, and it will be able to turn everything on there into the spoken word. I mean, this is really a sort of a unique advancement. So you don't, what it basically means is that you, as someone who's blind or whatever, you don't have to rely on specially designed washing machines then, or modify them with dots or whatever, because you'll be able to control it on your phone using your screen reader. which will mean that once all this smart technology is on everything, it'll mean you can buy whichever washing machine you want or dishwasher, whichever ones, and control them with your phone. So I cannot speak more about what activities are underway, but I certainly think this is an eye on in the coming years.
Robin Spinks, you'll be aware, of course, that many of our customers, you know, even though Samsung are making huge strides when it comes to mobile accessibility, not everybody at home's going to necessarily want to use an app to control, you know, their washing machine, fridge, or whatever it is. So how do we address that?
I think it's a challenge, Dave. You know, some people are keen to jump on board something like SmartThings. It's really easy to use. It's very intuitive. I think people should give it a try if they haven't done so far. But, you know, one of the things we often try to do is just create a way of working that allows us to deliver smart products, but also simplified products. So people will have seen, for example, another branded washing machine that we ranged about 2 years ago, and that has a much more low-tech approach where it literally uses a tactile overlay on top of the touchscreen and standard components. And it uses an acoustic beeping system. That's a sort of simplified approach. But, you know, if you ultimately want to get the most out of the device and be able to, you know, enjoy and utilize its features, the smart approach is going to give you more in the long run. So I think it's about making sure that we've got offerings that cater for people at both ends of that spectrum and also people who are somewhere in between. And it's recognizing also that people move. You know, people might start off with a very simple, low-tech solution. As they get more confidence, they graduate onto something with a bit more sophistication.
Yeah. I mean, I quite like using my smart speaker to find out how much time I've got left on my dishwasher. Let's talk about TV then, Michiel. Samsung is often recognised and celebrated in the community of blind and partially sighted people for the accessibility features that are found on many Samsung smart TVs. Can you sort of speak to that a little bit and tell us something about that journey?
Yeah, I know some great work has been done on the TVs, but my work focuses on the mobile, so I'm not really in a position to speak for the TV business per se. But I would like to say that it is great that Samsung is getting the recognition in the industry for its accessibility efforts in this area. And it's under the company ethos of creating a better pathway for all and adhering to the core pillars of engaging communities, promoting equity and lasting commitment.
Let's bring Robin in then. Robin, what role do you think companies like Samsung have in bringing about wider change when it comes to accessibility across the tech industry?
You know, it's a really good question, Dave, and it's a powerful change because really what we saw quite a long time ago, we were trying to influence the TV industry to create accessibility, to build an accessible interface into a television. And actually, you know, when Samsung did that at scale, I think it sent an enormously powerful message out to the whole of the rest of the industry, which basically said, look, these guys are doing it. Either you're on board or you're not, you know? And if Samsung can deliver at scale accessibility on, for example, you know, TV platform, then it clearly sends out a message to other players in the industry that says, you know, there's an expectation that you do this because your competitors are delivering it. So I think that's about, you know, creating a disruption and actually enabling other companies to follow suit because the customer expects it. You know, if you were to go and look at a new TV and you were to look at a Samsung TV, you'd see a really, you know, developed range of accessibility features across the board. But if you then went to look at another brand, you would expect them to deliver something comparable. So it's about upping the game. And I think Samsung's done that. Just to speak on TV as a customer, you know, Samsung has upped the bar when it comes to the accessibility of television, unquestionably.
Mikkel, when we were talking earlier, you were saying about how a lot of this work just simply wouldn't be possible without the involvement of people with disabilities. So as a UX researcher for Samsung, what opportunities do you have to gain access to that lived experience, people who are themselves blind or partially sighted contributing to your work?
This is where RNIB have been such a valuable tool for us, because what they do is that they give us the opportunity to link us directly with customers that use these tools. And so we do various different testing methods. Some of them will be just user trials or in-person testing, where we get to see people using the phone directly. And it's been such a great thing to see, because if we'd use the screen reader, for example, if I try using that myself, like close my eyes and just try it, you know, there's only so much I can learn. But if I watch someone who's actually using it, it's just fascinating. I didn't realize that you could have the speed of the how fast it talks, as fast as it does. Some people, they have it on so quick that I have no idea what it's saying almost. And it's really interesting. And you get so many different styles in the way that people use these different tools, whether it's the screen reader or the magnifier. As we say, like in the magnifier, you could have it full screen, you can have it a smaller screen. Maybe you just like zoom, maybe you just like increasing the size of the fonts. And seeing in person people using the different features and understanding that there's a huge variety in how these things are used, and that, you know, it's not just a one size fits all thing. We have to consider so many different ways in order to find solutions and to offer the customizability that it all works as well. And just finding all that out and seeing it and trying to improve everything, that's been possible because of working with RNIB.
Robin, looking ahead then to the future of inclusive design, where would you like us to be in, say, 5 years from now?
Well, RNIB is working to try and build the perfect country for people with sight loss as an ambition. So we're really trying to create a society where people don't experience barriers. So for me, thinking ahead 5 years, I'd love to see the kind of technology that SmartThings, for example, delivers, becoming available to a lot more people, and a lot more people using it. Essentially, I'd like to see interfaces that don't present a barrier at the outset and that are intuitive and easy to learn, whatever your level of vision or hearing. That's a big challenge, and it's easy to say it like that as an ambition, but it's a big challenge to get there. I think what's really encouraging, and we've heard this today, is we're seeing some really positive steps along that journey. We're also seeing multiple approaches to achieving that goal. And I think for us, it can only be possible through collaboration between manufacturers and developers of consumer electronics appliances, organizations like RNIB, and of course, blind and partially sighted people themselves. It's that kind of three-way partnership that makes it a success. So I'm very excited about the future and what technology will deliver. And also, I'm really excited for people to get involved, to feedback, to try products, to give their experiences, and to help to shape the way forward.
So how about you, Mikkel? Is there anything you'd like to see in 5 years from now?
We want the best core experience. So it's all good providing loads of tools and features, but if people rarely use them, that's not so great. But what we want is the core accessibility experience to be rock solid. So what I mean by that is we want the screen reader to be bulletproof reliable, so that when you swipe, it goes exactly where you want it to, and that when it speaks, it always makes sense. And we want the zoom features to work perfectly as well. There's no buttons out of reach or text which can't be read. So 5 years from now, obviously we see all that smart tech coming through and exciting things on that front. But it's also just about not taking the eye off the ball with that core experience, the thing that you need it to just be solid every single day, and we just want it to be the best experience possible on that front. And that's where the inclusive design is so useful, working with RNIB, because it's that testing that helps us get that core experience absolutely solid, because we learn so much from that testing.
Mikhail, before I let you go, I know you're a busy chap, and thank you once again so much for all your time today speaking with us here on RNIB Connect Radio. Congratulations, by the way, on behalf of all blind and partially sighted people who benefit from all those accessibility features, not just on smartphones, but wearables, smart TVs, and many other products besides. If anyone has got feedback for Samsung about accessibility, or we just want to kind of keep across any news in terms of accessibility developments, what's the best way to do that?
Well, we're always working with RNIB to improve the vision accessibility experience, and I think it's best if people want to get involved in the testing to contact RNIB and become part of the testing that way. And if anyone's already using the Samsung phones and are wanting to give feedback, that can also be done through RNIB, and it would be great to hear from them, absolutely.
Finally, Robin, listeners wanting to keep across RNIB's inclusive design work, what's the best way to do that?
Best way to do that is to go to the RNIB website, which is rnib.org.uk, and you'll find a tab, Tech for Life, there, pretty high in that website. And then also, of course, I'll do the plug for you, Dave, RNIB Connect Radio, Tech Talk. I think this is a really vibrant show where we're finding lots of different contributors bringing new perspectives, new ideas, and talking about how tech can enable all of us to live a better, healthier, happier, more engaging life.
Robin Spinks, Inclusive Design Lead at RNIB, and Mikkel Foda from Samsung. Thank you both.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Of course, tech watchers will have been following the Apple Worldwide Developer Conference that took place earlier this month. And now we've had time for the dust to settle. Perhaps we can reflect and pick over some of the most important announcements around iOS 17 and the new Vision Pro augmented reality headset. Well, here to help me do that, we have Callum Stoneman, Tech Talk co-host, of course, and Hubert Pavalkovic, who is a podcaster and tech expert. Welcome in to you both. Callum, I'm going to come to you first. Just share with us, what can we expect coming to iOS 17? This, of course, is the operating system that powers our iPhones and, I guess, iPad OS is sort of related to that. So what can we expect later this year when iOS 17 drops?
Well, there's nothing huge in iOS 17, really. They're quite small, incremental changes. I don't think there's anything that's going to be game-changing in terms of mainstream features. I think the one that I like the sound of the most is a feature called Name Drop, where you can bring two iPhones together and you can share contact details that way. So rather than having to mess about trying to type in somebody's number or email address or doing that thing where you go, oh, well, I'll give you my number and then you leave me a missed call and we'll save it that way, you can just bring your two iPhones together. And as far as I understand it, we haven't had time to get our hands on all of this yet. This is all coming later this year, or a little bit earlier if you're feeling adventurous and you want to get the betas. But as far as I understand it, you can just hold your two iPhones together and you can choose what information you want to share with each other. And I think that could be good for accessibility as well, because how many times have we been at events or, you know, conferences, particularly those that are not necessarily for the blind, and you come home with a pocket full of these little business cards and leaflets, and then you've got to try and scan them or get somebody to read the details to you. It'd be great to be able to just hold your iPhone to someone else's iPhone who you've been chatting to, and they can share with you their email address or their work number or whatever they want to share. So that could be pretty nice. In terms of accessibility announcements, we heard these a couple of weeks ago as part of Global Accessibility Awareness Day. I think the thing that I'm looking forward to the most, the one that I really want to get my hands on, is the point and speak feature. So this is where devices with LiDAR, which I've got, because I've got a 13 Pro, you can basically point the phone at an appliance, like a, I think they use the example of like kitchen appliances, and it will try and work out what the buttons do, and you can move your finger along the buttons and it will try and give you a description of what button your finger is on. So that could be interesting. I'm a little bit skeptical about how this will play out in reality, but I'm eager to try that one.
Hubert, iOS 17, what have you got?
When it comes to iOS 17, I'll mention some of the other features I've noted. As Callum said, a lot of it is fairly incremental, but there's hidden gems there. I have to say, I like the transcription of audio messages. Again, I think, like Callum said, I'd like to see this feature, see what it's, how good it actually is. But for people who like audio messages and who find it easier to communicate that way, but for people, for example, who can't actually, for whatever reason, listen to them, there is that transcription feature, which I think is really good. And I think it makes communication a bit easier. You've got other great features such as password sharing with trusted contacts. So if you struggle to remember your password, you can share it with family members. I think that's really good. And from my experience, something that I've had to help people with. And I think it's quite essential. I think what I also like is Apple's focus on mental health. So with their health app, you've had, you know, your fitness apps, your activity rings, your trends, you've got your heart health, your various steps, your hearing. But what Apple are now doing is adding a few more mental health focused features, like the journaling app. You can log your mood, and you even have standardized assessments where you can answer a set of questions and get some very basic guidance as to whether you should seek further advice from some professional, for example, a doctor, about your mental health, which is quite good. And also their vision health features to help with myopia, which I think is quite excellent that Apple is slowly diving into vision health. It'll be interesting to see how effective that is as well. There's a few little incremental features, like I said, which it's summarized that this isn't a major update, but it's got these little things, I'd say, that will help a lot. For example, you've got adaptive audio for AirPods Pro, where it will analyze your environment. For example, if you're listening to music, but then you start talking to someone, it will turn down the music and amplify the voice of people in front of you, which I think makes things excellent as well. And makes AirPods Pro maybe not an official hearing aid, but kind of an unexpected hearing aid, where it will help you with these little things. And of course, another big one I've got noted down here is offline maps for Apple Maps, where often you've got maps that drain your battery because it uses GPS and it's all frustrating, but you can download maps offline and actually get turn-by-turn directions, which I think is one of the other quite hidden gems and something that maps really needed, I think. And one more for me is a little one, back-to-back requests with Siri. So you can say something like, remind me to get milk and turn the heating on when I get home, something like that. You basically can do two requests at a time, which gives Siri a bit of a push to compete with the other voice assistants as well. So I think that's another nice little feature amongst many other little ones.
Now, iOS 17 is expected to be formally released in September, so it's still pretty early. But usually at this stage of the game, it's only the developers that typically can test the new operating system. But that's changed this year, Callum Stoneman.
It has, yeah. So the developer betas, normally you would have to be a paid member of the Apple developer program, but now the developer betas are free for everyone. And we should stress that, you know, the developer betas are very, very early betas, because the public beta has been around for quite a while. And normally the way it works is that developers get the really early, potentially unstable versions. And then the public beta, usually a couple of weeks or maybe a month or so later, they will get a slightly more polished beta, but it's still a beta. You know, you still shouldn't rely on it, still shouldn't install it on your primary device. But yeah, the developer beta is now free. So if you really want to dive in, then you could grab the developer betas right now. But it is very much hold on to your hats, because we don't quite know what we're in for with the at this stage.
Absolutely, not for the faint of heart. No, and no. As always, if you do want to test this stuff, have a separate device that is, you know, maybe an older device, not your primary device that you use to get things done on a daily basis. Please do not break your device.
Yeah, and I've been caught out. I always get torn with this every year, because I'm on the one hand, I'm so excited to get the betas and try these things out, but then on the other hand, I have only got one device. I don't really count my work iPhone, because obviously I can't just go installing betas on that. But I've done it before where I've installed it on my primary device and things have gone wrong and I've had to restore from backup, and it's my own fault. You shouldn't do it.
Mm. And restoring might not always be straightforward. So I would avoid putting those early betas on your primary device if you possibly can. We cannot help you if you write in and say, I put a beta of iOS 17 and I've broken my phone. We won't be able to help you, okay? So I hope I've made that crystal. So let's move on then and talk about Vision Pro. Hubert, what on earth is it?
Well, Apple have finally announced their long-awaited augmented reality headset. So for the last few years, every year you had the rumor, Apple will announce this. They will announce it this year. They will announce it next year and the year after. Well, Apple have finally announced the Vision Pro augmented reality headset. Not out yet, but it will be available apparently next year.
Good. So my understanding is that augmented reality aims to blend computer-generated content with the real world. So you can look around your room and you might see an app, you know, floating in space, or maybe you could label something or highlight something visually in a way that blends that content from the real world video feed and computer generated material. So that's my understanding.
Yes, I think that is probably a very accurate description of augmented reality, that it is very much interacting quite visually, and it does have voiceover support. There has been a demo shown that it does have voiceover support, which would be, again, interesting to see in practice.
Mm. And I think that involves pinching fingers. Or
it does.
Callum Stoneman?
Yeah, I'm not entirely clear on the gestures, but I think it's similar to what you'd expect from voiceover generally. You know, I think pinching your fingers a certain way is the equivalent of a flick left and right, and then another way is the equivalent of a double tap. It's all there. I mean, I had no doubt, to be honest, that this would be accessible, but it's just to what extent? Because, you know, like we've just been saying, this is the main focus of this is visual, really. It's, you know, it's having this. I mean, they describe it as like a, did they say 100 meter or 100 foot, you know, display right in front of your eyes, and you could just immerse yourself in a film or a game or something. It's incredible stuff, but just I can't even come close to visualizing how this would work and how this would look.
And why do we think a blind or partially sighted person would be interested in this? It's hugely expensive, isn't it? It's like $3,000 or something. And can we think of any practical applications for a blind or partially sighted person?
You're right. I mean, this price. I mean, I was reading through this and thinking, yeah, this sounds good. And then I got to the price and my initial reaction, well, I can't really say my initial reaction on air, but basically it was, how much?
Right, but that aside, because some of us have, you know, Braille devices that cost a similar amount.
Oh,
and
yeah,
if there is a killer application for blind and partially sighted people, then as a funded purchase, it might be worth trying to get hold of a Vision Pro. So,
well, this is the interesting thing, because that was my initial reaction. But then when you think about it, this is mainstream technology fast approaching specialist tech prices, isn't it? It's the price, the sort of price that we're all used to paying for Braille note takers or magnifiers, and, you know, things like the Orcam are a similar sort of price. If something like, because you've got a lot here, you've got LiDAR, you've got, is it 12 cameras on here and like 6 microphones or something? There's a lot going on. And I think if something like Envision or Be My Eyes or, you know, Seeing AI or Ira or something came to this, or even all of those things, because obviously all of those are, you know, iOS apps at the minute, if those kind of apps could come to this, and you know, NaviLens as well for navigation. I've been saying this for a long time. It'd be amazing to have those on wearables. If that could become a reality, then I think blind people would be interested in this.
And it could be a very justifiable tool then for work purposes if that was to be the case. If all of these apps came onto this platform, which many people have been speculating about, it would be quite a something. You could make a very good case for Vision Pro to be a very good assistive tool for blind and partially sighted people, definitely.
All right, before we wrap this up, is there anything else that grabbed your attention from Apple's WWDC?
I think being able to share AirTags was a highlight for me. Only quite a small thing, but I was really surprised when I got a couple of AirTags for me and my wife when we went on holiday. We put a couple in our luggage just in case our cases went missing. I got them all set up, got them connected to me, went to share them with my wife, who's in our family sharing group, so pretty much everything else is shared with her, and you can't do it. They're just tied to one device, whereas now you can finally share them with up to 5 people. So if you regularly lose something, then you can share it with somebody else and they can help you locate it as well now, which is good.
Do you use AirTags, Hubert?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, actually. I'm about to go on holiday in a couple of months and it'll be my kind of first independent abroad holiday. So one of my biggest fears is exactly what Callum mentioned, luggage going missing. So I will be actually purchasing an AirTag for the first time to use it, because I really think it'll be excellent to have more as a precaution. Might not have to use it, but it's there as a safety blanket. And I think when you're doing independent travel, the more safety blankets you can have to make sure you are protected, you can't go wrong with that.
Well, let us know what you think. iOS 17, Apple Vision Pro, are you interested? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert and Callum, thank you very much. Here on Tech Talk, we've spoken a lot about artificial intelligence and how increasingly AI is being used to generate text-to-speech synthesis, or synthetic voices, the voices that our machines use to speak to us. Now, of course, these voices are typically recordings of humans that have been sliced and diced and rearranged to speak anything you would like. Well, the next generation of AI voice is here, and you can now upload your own voice and have a machine speak anything that you didn't say. Steve Tyler is along as Director of Technology from Leonard Cheshire. Welcome in, Steve. Welcome back, I should say, to Tech Talk. You've got a little bit of an experiment that you'd like to conduct on our listeners.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, got a bit of an experiment. I've been working very closely with a colleague and friend, Richard Orme, from the DAISY Consortium, and then a range of other people inside Leonard Cheshire and from industry. And this stuff is very exciting. In my daily work, you know, I work with people who will shortly lose the ability to speak, for example, as a result of brain injury or other neurological issues. Well, providing them with the ability to keep their voice, you know, is a dream come true. What we've managed to do here is push the boundaries, I think, or we've, I don't know, turned the next chapter, I think, in the development of synthetic speech, and hopefully you'll see what I mean. So our test today is we've made a synthetic version of a person that some of you might know. His name's George Kircher. He's also part of the DAISY Consortium. He's one of the technology guides there. So what you will hear is, in no particular order, a sonnet that George actually read some time ago, and we captured the recording of that. He'd already got it. And then we've also got a synthetic version of George. We made a synthetic version of George's voice, and then we gave it the exact same text that he had read. And we didn't amend anything. We didn't change the punctuation in the text. We didn't tweak with the output. We didn't do anything. So I'd be very interested to know whether you can tell the difference. Which one would you say is the real voice? Which one would you say is the synthetic version? And one interesting little thing for you all, part of the reason for doing this test, for my own interest, is we're beginning to notice a difference, and I'm not going to give it away at the moment, but we're beginning to notice a difference in what sighted people think the real George is versus what blind people think the real George is, who are regular users of synthetic speech. We'll see.
All right, let's roll clip A.
Sonnet 116. Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. Oh no, love is an ever fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark, whose worth unknown though his height be taken. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but bears it out even to the edge of doom. If this be false, and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved. William Shakespeare.
Right. Okay, and now here is clip B.
Sonnet 116. Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. Oh no, it is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark whose worth's unknown, although his height be taken. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but bears it out even to the edge of doom. If this be error, and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved. William Shakespeare.
And that was clip B.
Tell us which one you think is the recording of George, and which one you think is the synthetic version of George.
Okie doke. And we would be interested in the reasons for your answer. And you can send that to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K @rnib.org.uk. And we'll be back next week with the answer. Righto, that's it. We come to the end of another Tech Talk. Thank you so much for your company, and massive thanks to Hubert for joining us this week as well. Do get in touch. Any thoughts about anything you've heard on the programme, or if you've got a suggestion, we'd love to hear from you. The email address, as always, is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Let us know which of those voices you thought was real and which one you thought was the AI, and any other thoughts. Do drop us a line. But from myself, Dave Williams, and Callum Stoneman.
Bye from me.
Bye-bye.